Welcome to the Arizona Traveler. My name is Vicki Duke, and I'm your volunteer broadcaster, bringing to you a series of articles, mainly from Travel and Leisure magazine, although today I have one article from Condé Nast I think would be of interest to you. And I am coming to you from member-supported Sun Sounds of Arizona. We'll be starting with the Golden Rules of Retirement Travel by Stacy Latow from Condé Nast magazine. Bonnie and Bob Gumpert travel regularly in their retirement. Not beholden to one short vacation a year, they average 7 big ones. Their compounding experience has allowed them to develop a code of rules by which they abide. Tips and tricks to use wherever they go. After one too many of the small rooms common in boutique hotels, for example, they've cut them out entirely. Also out of the question are walking tours within 2 days of arrival in a new destination, as they prefer to settle in. Their daughter Lauren describes them as pros on retiree travel, but they are not the only ones with advice to give. There are former museum curators who have learned not to overbook themselves, solo travelers who always learn a little of the local language. Adherence to anyone's rules will never ensure a vacation free of hiccups, where no flight is ever delayed, every tour is worth the hours put in, and every meal sublime. But learning from others may improve your chances of a good time, even when things inevitably go sideways. We've spoken to over 20 retired travelers to hear how their golden years have informed the way they travel. Find some of their savviest secrets for better trips here. Number one. Take a ride on the hop-on, hop-off bus tour. If she's traveling in a city that offers one of those double-decker, hop-on, hop-off sightseeing tours, Denver-based Heidi Bertoni, 65, who goes on multiple trips a year, is definitely stepping aboard. Bertoni says it's a great way to figure out the rest of your itinerary, get tips from other travelers and the tour guide, and get a feel for the new city. It's the first thing I do to get the lay of the land, says Bertoni. Her previous career in sales means the frequent solo traveler will talk to anybody, so these tours also open the door for socializing and making connection. Number two, figure out what to avoid. For Paul and Lynn Zelvansky, 77 and 76 respectively, travel is less about hitting all the top spots and more about learning where not to go, whether that means avoiding tourist traps, the most sweltering hours at fairs, or not putting yourself in danger by flagging a taxi when it's unsafe. They visit the Venice Biennale in fall now, rather than at the opening, to avoid the worst of the crushes. It also helps them more effectively skirt the city's infamous pickpockets. Lynn's wallet was stolen on a crowded Vaporetto ferry in 2022. Number three, BYOTP. Toilet paper in Europe is very scratchy and not good for sensitive parts, says Florida native Karen Butera, an avid pickleball player who often travels with the sport in mind. Whenever overseas, she always travels with her own toilet paper. Butera, 66, is taking her granddaughter to see Taylor Swift in Paris this summer. And yes, she will be packing TP. Creature comforts are even more crucial on the road than they are at home. Number four, don't overschedule. Pack to the brim itineraries used to be J. Patrice Merendell's MO. But these days, the former chief curator at Los Angeles County Museum of Art is more keen on scheduling plenty of time for the unexpected. Gone are the nonstop days with planned breakfasts, lunch, and dinners. Instead, Merendell, 79, leaves room for the possibility of something unexpected and exciting. It often pays off. Number five, pack light. I second that one. Buffalo, New York-based Lisa Ladondi, 74, and her travel companion Antoinette Judelson, 70, with whom she's been traveling with for over a decade, are pros at packing light. The pals can manage for a month on very little, relying on the versatility of black leggings and black tops, says Lalonde. The trick? Develop a travel uniform. Bring just a few versions and wash undergarments as necessary, says Judelson. Big suitcases stuffed to the brim with a ton of different outfits are more of a hassle than a luxury. They're a pain in the neck if you're getting on a train or off a train or moving from one city to another. Number six, don't get too excited. Judelson, a former teacher who met Lalonde when they were working together at the same school in Buffalo, has another travel rule that served her well, letting go of expectations. I never get excited about a trip, says Judelson. Instead, the savvy traveler lets the excitement emerge based on what is in front of her in the moment. 7. Avoid traveling on Sundays. RVer Janelle Jones, 64, is against traveling on Sundays. As she puts it, anybody and their brother with an RV travels on Sunday. Long weekend RVers who have to get back for work on Monday use Sundays to head home. So retired Jones simply avoids the day altogether. It's also, according to her, the biggest day to get in an RV wreck. Yet another reason to sit back and relax. You have nowhere you need to be. After all, take advantage. Number eight, learn a few words of the local language. Charlotte Simpson, whose blog, Traveling Black Widow, documents her travels, 100 countries and counting so far, says her number one travel rule is to learn a few key phrases. Hello, goodbye, please, thank you, in the dominant language of the places she visits. Simpson says her efforts are always well received. I just find inevitably it sort of stuns people when I even just say good morning. Simpson, who prefers not to reveal her age, says she gets a lot out of bridging the language gap with just a few words. It just makes people so friendly and so happy that you took this moment to learn their language. 9. Travel slower. When you cram too much into a single trip, the whole experience just kind of becomes a blur, says Gillian Bott, 43, and Stephanie Myers, 51, whose blog, Our Freedom Years, documents their early retirement and subsequent travels. The couple, who hail from Ontario, Canada says staying in one place for an extended period of time helps them avoid travel burnout, keep costs low, and enjoy the whole experience more. All that rushing around on limited PTO, well behind them. Number 10, go your own way. The pandemic crystallized things for Kim Kelly Stamp, 65, and her wife Liz Schick, 62, who left it all behind and decided to travel around the country in a red 21-foot teardrop trailer. They've since gotten really good at going with the flow. We know where we're going to stay along the way, but we hold that really loosely and give ourselves the opportunity to make something else happen, explains Stamp. This approach led them to Laurel, Mississippi, where the HGTV show Hometown, of which Stamp and Schick are big fans of, is based. Instead of following a regimented schedule, they followed their passion when the road forked, literally. 11. Keep an open heart and mind. In spite of being seasoned travelers, John and Bev Martin, 60, who started the retirement traveler site to share their journey with others, admit they still need to remind themselves that they can't control everything. We have to be patient and receptive to the lessons the world is trying to teach us, says the couple. One that keeps coming up, retirement is not the time to stop dreaming about new and different routes in life. Number 12, do your research. The Gumports appreciate getting a taste of the local culture wherever they are traveling, and they're not opposed to tours or experiences that deliver on this front. But Bonnie has a few words of advice. If you're looking at purchasing something that uses words such as bespoke, artisanal, farm-to-table, and more fluffy adjectives, make sure these experiences are as authentic as they sound. Read reviews thoroughly and take the time to research before you buy, advises Bonnie. It's fun to be spontaneous, but it's easy to be misled by clever marketing and buzzwords. 13. It's a marathon, not a sprint. It wasn't long before Brenda Juan adopted and adapted a popular van lifer rule. Don't travel more than 3 hours, get in by 3 p.m., and stay at least 3 nights. Juan, who at 47 retired earlier than many, is adamant about not trying to do too much in one day to avoid burnout. She and her husband take their time, prioritizing quality over quantity with their stops and stays. It makes the entire experience all the richer. 14. You can always head home. Diana Peterson is on track to hit the 100 country mark just in time for her 70th birthday in 2026. But as much as the black solo traveler loves seeing the world, she's not afraid to ditch a trip if something isn't working out. Wherever I am in the world, if for whatever reason I am uncomfortable or I don't feel well, I'm going to plop down that credit card and get home. 15. Start the day early to avoid the crowds. Artist Sima Liebman, 76, enjoys going to museums while visiting new cities and places. But since the retiree is immunocompromised, she plans these outings a little differently. Now Liebman hits the museums as early in the day as possible and masks up while taking in the art, unless there are very few people inside. Whatever your motivation, rising early is something you can be sure the hordes of 20-something backpackers won't be doing. Beat them to all the best spots. 16. Base yourself strategically. Betty, 80, an art collector who declined to share her last name, has found that mid-sized hotels, meaning about 200 rooms in central locations with just enough services she wants and needs, do the job. "I like a very good hotel, but not necessarily the best," says Betty. "As long as you have the basics covered, it's really about location, location, location." 17. Don't wait for tomorrow. Instead of putting off travel for a later date, Chicago-based Ruthie Maldonado Delwich advises those interested in exploring the world to get out there and do it now because tomorrow isn't promised. Maldonado Delwich, who's been traveling since she retired in 2017, says, "Don't wait if there's something you want to do or a place you want to visit." Former psychiatrist Anne Heaslett, 60, who aims to run the six major world marathons in her retirement, feels exactly the same way. There's no time like the present. And that's the end of that article. And on to Travel and Leisure Magazine, the April edition. In experiences, high tea. In Sri Lanka, a new walking trail weaves through mist-shrouded forests and centuries-old estates. Erin Vivid Riley makes the pilgrimage. Heavy clouds rolled overhead, clearing out the day's humidity in Sri Lanka's central highlands. Below a forested hillside, tea pickers in colorful saris move among rows of electric green bushes. As if the scene were set to high contrast, in the distance, plumes of smoke carry the scent of roasting tea leaves. I was walking the Pico Trail, a long-distance hiking path that opened in Sri Lanka last year. Largely made up of existing paths used to travel between tea fields and factories. It winds 186 miles through estates and national parks. The trail, which connects 80 hamlets and villages that see few foreign visitors, was designed to bolster Sri Lanka's tourism industry in the aftermath of the terrorist bombings that took place in the capital, Colombo, on Easter Day 2019. More a walking holiday than a backpacking expedition, the entire trail is designed to take a laid-back 22 days, with hikers covering an average of 9 miles each day. For those who don't have 3 weeks to spare, it's possible to link up several sections with the help of a guide and driver, as I did on my 5-day trip. After arriving in Colombo, I boarded a 3-hour train ride to the ancient city of Kandy, where the trail starts. I spent my first night at the Tin Suite W15 Hantha, where a wraparound veranda overlooked misty mountains topped with stupas and temples. The next morning, after a late breakfast of string hoppers, which are rice noodles, and curry, I set out on the first segment of my route, 7.5 miles of easy dirt road that cut through colorful villages and Hanthana Mountain Range, a popular hiking spot before ending in the small town of Galaha. I was accompanied by Miguel Cunot, the sustainable tourism consultant who designed the trail. You know that saying, to understand an island's soul, head to its interior. He asked me as we ate mangoes from a roadside stand during one of our breaks. I knew what he meant. Like many visitors to Sri Lanka, I had only spent time along the beautiful coastline. It wasn't until this hike that I began to sense the island's true character. On my second day, Cunard and I walked uphill through a steep pine forest and then followed a ridge that overlooked the Knuckles Mountain Range and the snaking Mahaweli River. Thick fog in the distance signaled the looming monsoons. 2 hours later, the forest opened up to the Lulakandera, Sri Lanka's first tea estate, which dates back to 1867. From there, it was a 56-mile drive to Goat Fell, a beautiful bungalow that overlooks Ceylon tea fields. I dipped my tired legs into the infinity pool, then read by the living room fire as the rains rolled in. The next morning, it was a quick drive to Nuwara Eliya, a picturesque city that is a popular gateway for many Sri Lankans. We hiked 6 miles through a tableau that felt like the quintessential image of the countryside. Women move through tea fields, gently plucking only the youngest buds and leaves from each branch to ensure the highest quality of Ceylon black tea. Many of the tea pickers are descendants of the indentured South Indians brought over by the British colonists in the 19th century, and the work is still punishing. Under wages set by the government, they must pick about 40 pounds of tea each day to earn just over $3. While Nuwara Eliya is the official end of the Pico Trail, hikers can follow the route in any order they like. So after a tea break, we drove 60 minutes to Horton Plains National Park, where a windswept plain was circled by a cloud forest. We strolled under a troop of bear monkeys swinging from trees before the dense canopy opened up to a switchback called the Devil's Staircase, which overlooks the lush Udawariya Valley. The night we slept at a 7-suite retreat in Haputale, where Thomas Lipton, the Scottish merchant, began his Lipton tea empire in the late 19th century. The next morning, I took a tuk-tuk to a panoramic overlook called Lipton's Seat, where Sir Thomas is said to have sipped tea and looked out over his estate. The view has not changed much. For our final hike, we drove to a modest village, Makulela, then climbed through the eucalyptus forest to a ridge dotted with Buddhist temples and waterfalls, until we reached the 9-arch bridge. The famous viaduct turned out to be just as dramatic in real life as it is in photos. While other tourists arrived in tuk-tuks, it was satisfying to approach the bridge on foot, alongside children in starched school uniforms. The people behind the Tourism Resilience Project, which established the trail and is funded by the European Union and the U.S. Agency for International Development, hope it can empower villagers to make a living from the new route, perhaps by operating a juice bar or tea tasting room for hikers. We want the people living and working there to feel like they're a part of it, said Fishadina Fernando, a project manager. The vision includes giving visitors more chances to learn from locals. It was just this kind of understanding that soothed me during the night I spent there. I arrived after dark and was led down a grand hallway that opened onto a manicured lawn. Beyond an infinity pool, a fire burned, engulfing trees along the hotel's edge. But after having hiked the highlands for several days, where the sight of smoke rising from small patches of forest is a near constant, I had recalibrated my relationship to seeing fires in nature. A tea farmer had taught me about controlled burning, always simmering, never boiling over. I took my tea, fell asleep, and by morning, a small patch of earth just beyond the estate's periphery was scorched. But everything else, including the view of mist-shrouded tea hills spilling into a lush valley, remained beautifully intact. That's the end of that article and the end of our time together today. Thank you so much for listening to my show, The Arizona Traveler. Again, my name is Vicki Duke, and I am coming to you from member-supported Sun Sounds of Arizona.